Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the America Magazine podcast for the week of October 20th. This week, our special issue is on sports and spirituality. And this week, we interview Dave Anderson, longtime writer for the New York Times, about his article, The Games of Tomorrow. We began by asking Dave how he got his start in sports writing.
I got started in the sense that I loved reading sports writers. I mean, that's what I thought. I was a reader as a kid. Don't forget, when I was a kid, there was no television to watch, which is a blessing. The only sports you could even listen to on the radio was probably baseball and maybe an occasional football game and a fight. But, everything I knew at that time about sports was from what I read in the newspapers, the great sports writers of that time, meaning the 40s, basically the 40s, the early 40s. You know, Frank Graham, Jimmy Cannon, writers like that, and especially Frank Graham, who was a sports columnist and also wrote several books, on Lou Gehrig and the Yankees and the Dodgers, the Giants, and then after the war, Jimmy Cannon at the New York Post, who was then at the Post. You know, the strange thing is that, and of course Red Smith when he came to New York, and Arthur Daly, who was then at the New York Times. I mean, those were the people I read, and that's what I wanted to do. You know, people think if you're a sports writer, you're a frustrated athlete or a frustrated ball player. I wasn't a frustrated ball player. I didn't want to be Joe DiMaggio or Ted Williams or Jackie Robinson. I wanted to be Red Smith and Frank Graham and Jimmy Cannon.
Now, did you play sports at all growing up?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we all did. As a kid, you play. I played CYO basketball, played CYO baseball. I grew up in Brooklyn in Bay Ridge in Our Lady of Angels Parish. My great claim to athletic fame was our class won the intramural championship at Xavier High School. We had one varsity player, Tom Hamill, and the team we beat in the finals had three varsity players, so we considered that a great triumph.
Now, you mentioned you went to Xavier High School here in New York. What was the sports culture like in New York Catholic schools back then?
Well, it was basically basketball.
Yeah.
And football to some extent. But it was basically basketball. And it was great basketball. I mean, at Xavier, we had George Kafton. He was 2 years ahead of me. And George, as you know, went on to Holy Cross and was the most valuable player in what is now considered the Final Four. When Holy Cross won the 1947 NCAA championship. From the time I was about 13 and 14, I would go to the Madison Square Garden to watch college basketball, Saturday doubleheaders. You know, this was before the Knicks, before there was even an NBA. There was no NBA till 1946, 47. And you could have your Xavier a GO card, or any high school, actually, what they called the GO card, General Organization, I think it stood for. But if you had a GO card from your high school, you could go in and watch the Rangers or a college, anything at the Garden. And you had to sit in the balcony, but you showed the GO card and 25 cents, and you were in the balcony at Madison Square Garden. I mean, how could you beat it?
Now, there's a long tradition in New York, as you say, of Catholic basketball in high schools and on other levels. Why do you think basketball in particular and not other sports?
Well, because it fits the school year better than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it you can play it very cheaply. I mean, all you need to play basketball in the schoolyards or in the playgrounds is a pair of sneakers and a ball. It's like soccer. I mean, that's why basketball has been so popular here. You know, baseball, you need more equipment. You need gloves, bats, spikes, balls. Football, you need a lot of equipment. And equipment costs money when you're a kid, especially then. But basketball, all you needed was a ball and a pair of sneakers, and you were a basketball player.
Now, were there any differences between, the Catholic sports culture and these basketball leagues versus public schools?
I guess there was, but I mean, I just knew about Xavier and the actually Xavier wasn't part of the CHSAA at that time. It was kind of an independent Catholic school, whereas most of the other Catholic schools were part of the Catholic High School Athletic Association, such as St. John's Prep had great teams in those years. And that was always the other great team in the city. I remember George Kafton's senior year at Xavier. Xavier was by far the best independent school, and independent Catholic school, so to speak. And St. John's and also Cardinal Hayes always had good teams. Regis had great teams. But again, Regis, like Xavier, was an independent team. But I remember St. John's Prep had a great team. Al McGuire was a sophomore, and he was a varsity starter as a sophomore on that team.
Now, your article for America, which is in our, this is our, I think, first, as far as I know, sports issue, you kind of look into a crystal ball, as you say, and predict the future of a few sports. Maybe you can talk about baseball and football, what you see as the future for those two sports.
Well, you know, everything today is geared to television and the internet and cyberspace. So, you know, what we're watching today is different as that is today from what it was when you and I grew up several years, many years ago. It's going to get even crazier in the sense that, you know, you'll be able to watch a game on a screen probably the size of the wall in your room, in your family room or wherever. A flat screen TV that is now maybe 4 feet at the most wide will be the as much as big as you want it to be. You'll also probably be able to watch games on your cell phone. I mean, that's what it's going to come to. So, you know, everything is geared to that, to instant sports, rather than reading about them as we did, or at least as I did. So, you know, it's almost scary to think of what the future of sports is in a media sense. But again, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know if there'll be too many kids watching it rather than just going out and playing it.
Right, you mentioned that in your article about video games are so popular, but a lot of these kids are not actually playing the games.
Exactly, sure, and it that can only get worse, I think.
And specifically, you talk about baseball and football, and baseball you see as having more of an international future versus football seems like it's mostly an American sport.
Yeah, football definitely is. I mean, the NFL even tried to have an NFL Europe, and you know, and it was kind of an oddity for a while, and a lot of people watched it in Europe, but still, it's not their game. In Europe, soccer is the game, and just as soccer is all over the world, and basketball to a great extent now. Soccer is still the most popular sport in the world, but it's not as not that popular in, or anywhere near as popular in the United States as the football or baseball or basketball or even hockey. And yet more kids play it, but there's not many, there aren't, the pro league has no real appeal on an overall basis because it's too difficult for soccer to jump over the grip that baseball, football, basketball, and even hockey has on America, or even golf and tennis.
In your article, you wrote about the escalating costs of watching sports and, of course, player salaries. Now, these have been things that have been, were worrisome trends for a long time. Do you think we're at a kind of a turning point, or is it any different now than it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
Well, if there's more income for the leagues and the teams from television or from any kind of electronic devices, you know, the players' association in each sport will, because of the contracts, the labor contracts, has to have a certain percentage of that income. And if there's more and more income, there's more and more percentage. Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of reasons for people to stop watching sports, or professional sports at least. I mean, the high cost of going to a game, the doping scandals. Yet, you know, attendance still seems to be high.
Well, it's high at Yankee Stadium. Well, it's high in New York,
yeah.
Because, first of all, there's 15 to 18 million people
sure.
You can draw from. No, it's not as necessarily that high in Kansas City. and in a lot of other cities around the country. But the thing is, it's as expensive as it is, the Yankees were still drawing 50,000 people for a game, even though they didn't really have a playoff team this year. So again, it depends on where and when and how things are, you know, how good the team is and how willing people are to use some of their disposable income to go to a ball game, especially with for example, in the new Yankee Stadium too. The tickets, at least the prime tickets, will be even much more expensive than they have been in the old Yankee Stadium.
Now, you don't talk about collegiate sports in your article, but I mean, if for somebody who's interested in taking their child to a ball game or a football game, is this a good alternative, or are some of the problems kind of, this is where they begin?
You have to really be a fan of that college, or have, let's say, the parent goes to that has gone to that college, so there's more of an immediate connection. I mean, you just don't have to live in the area, although that's true of a lot of college sports, because the big college football teams and the big college basketball teams are, in a sense, that area's pro team. So, you know, it depends how good the team is, just like everything else, how good it is and how stiff the prices are. But also, football really is, whether it's pro football or college football, is still the best bargain in sports for the fan who wants to get buy a season ticket or wants to go to games regularly, because there's only, even in the NFL, there's only 8 home games. Well, and even if the tickets are $100 a game, which is what the Giants are roughly these days and what most teams are, I'm talking about an average ticket, not a luxury suite, but you know, a lot of people can afford that for, let's say, two or four tickets for 8 games. And in college, it might only be 6 games. So, but baseball, if you want the season ticket, you know, it's 80 games. And then again, you can buy a portion of that 80 games too. So, you know, if people have money and they want to have enough money to do that, they will continue to do it. But again, a lot of that will depend on the overall economy of the country, meaning this country, and that would depend on what is going on in Washington right now.
Right, sure. Now, you've traveled a lot, I'm sure, in your career covering different teams, and it seems from what you say that in the New York or Northeast, at least, there is at least more people going to the games, more people willing to spend the money, but it seems like it's different in say, the other parts of the country?
Well, again, that depends on the team. I mean, if the Kansas City Royals were winning their division every year, they're then this would be up too. I mean, the NFL virtually sells out every game, whereas baseball, again, it's 80 home games. But the NFL teams, there are enough fans, and overall, I think pro football is much more popular than baseball, Major League Baseball, in the sense that more people go to the games on a regular basis. But again, it's only 8 as opposed to 80. And but also the thing is that the betting involvement in pro football is much bigger than, I mean, everybody seems to bet pro football, whether it's at a casino or when I say everybody, I mean either somehow, whether it's at a casino or with a bookmaker or just in your office. And by betting, I can include the office pools, whatever it is. Usually, I'd say 70% of the people that are fans of pro football bet on a game, whether it's their home team or on a pool card or something, every week. It can be a dollar, but those persons would still be included in that thing. I mean, some people bet thousands. Pro football, the betting factor in pro football is the X factor that nobody ever dares to talk about, but we're talking about it.
Right. Now, you've been covering sports for 40 years, close to 50 years?
50
years.
Yeah, 50.
Did you ever have an opportunity to switch beats, or
Leave sports?
Leave sports, yeah.
No, I didn't have an opportunity, and I never sought an opportunity.
So why has it kept your interest for all these years?
Because I always look forward to the next big game. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed, and I still do, enjoy going to the big game or watching it on TV. It's not, I don't travel anymore, but that's okay. The television is there. That's my airplane. That's my jet to wherever the game is. So, you know, that's what I always enjoyed doing, going to the big game, the big event, whatever the sport may be. Because, you know, over all these years, I've covered everything. I mean, baseball, World Series, Super Bowls, NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. I covered 32 of Muhammad Ali's fights. I covered the U.S. Golf Open for 40 years. In the Masters for 40 years. I covered the U.S. Tennis Open for 30 years. So there really is. I went to 9 Olympics, including winter and summer. So, you know, there really hasn't been much that I haven't covered. Went to Indianapolis 500, I think, 3 times. The only thing I really haven't covered of the big races would be the NASCAR races, like the Daytona 500. And, you know, not that I'm going to go out of the way to do it just to do it, but that's about the only thing that I've never really covered.
Now, you said you got into sports writing because of the other sports writers, people
right.
like Red Smith.
And sports itself.
And sports
itself. Liked was the fact that sports, you always had a story, and it happened, and the story developed that day. You had a complete story that day. The team either won or lost. The player either played well or played badly. Somebody either won a fight or didn't win the fight. You know, in other journalism assignments, like if you cover politics, you don't know if what happens today is of any value maybe for another 10 years sometimes. You know, everything is up in the air. And another factor is that I have enough people who have lied to me over the years in sports. I don't need to listen to politicians lying to me every day.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, print doesn't play the role it did when you first got into the business.
Right.
But are there any particular sports writers that you read, that you like, that you
today?
Know, look? Today, yeah.
Well, I read them all.
Yeah.
So, but again, you know, you don't, unless you travel, and I no longer travel, you don't get to see those out-of-town papers as much as I used to. But even then, you would just see them on occasion. So there have been dozens of great sports writers. Some greater than others in the last 50 years.
Final question. If you were raising a young child right now, what sporting events would you either encourage him or her to play or would bring them to see?
Well, it would depend on the child. Mm-hmm. It would depend on what sports he or she gravitated to. My sons played basketball. One went to Holy Cross. Steve went to Holy Cross on a basketball scholarship. Mark played very good high school basketball and then played intramural games at Pratt when he was there. My youngest daughter played golf, country club golf when we had enough money to join a country club. The boys never had a country club, which is just, I'm just as happy. They grew up playing basketball on the playground. So.
Now, one of the reasons we're doing this issue on sports and also spirituality is that, you know, it's the belief of some of the editors here that sports is an important, there's a reason that sports is an important part of Catholic schools, that it's important a part of the life of not just, you know, the spirit as well. I mean,
sure.
Do you see that as well?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the great thing about sports is, you just as it was writing about it, every day you win or lose, and you learn how to win, and you learn how to lose. And you can't be too loud when you win, and you shouldn't be too sad when you lose. I mean, it's going to happen. And the more that happens, the more you learn how to adjust to each victory and each defeat.
Well, we'll end there. But Mr. Anderson, we just want to thank you again for joining us.
But there's no misters in my life. There's misters in the Jesuits, but that's about it.
Right. Okay. Well, Dave, thanks very much
Good,
for doing
Tim.
This.
Thank you.
I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. I encourage you to check out our special election blog, which can be found at americaelectionblog.blogspot.com, where we have commentary from Michael Sean Winters, a frequent contributor, and some of the editors looking forward to the election and the issues as relating to Catholic social teaching. Reminder that you can also comment on our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for American Magazine.